the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Well, obviously, we have a
break. I wasn't
break.
That hungry, but I saw the McRib was back.
I thought back. It was a new metal band.
I think they shouldn't even have the book read to the school, period.
This is smelling.
You blew it!
World famous Phil Hendry show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And this is where truth is our bitch. And we go where other talk shows would love to go, would just give their eye teeth to get to the places we get to on this show, but they can't do it. So forget it, man. And tonight we have a replay of our live performance of a Phil Hendry Christmas Carol. It's coming up in our final hour, and we've got a full cast. I play Bob Cratchit. We got Bud Dickman, who plays Ebenezer Dickman. Dave Oliva plays Nephew Fred. There's a whole cast, and that's coming up later on in our program tonight, which is the replay of our special live 2009 presentation of a Phil Hendry Christmas Carol. And it's very funny about that. As I was listening to parts of it today, because I was looking to do the cast list, and I was thinking, my God, within a few days I would be deathly ill, and within a week I'd be in the hospital, and I wasn't close to death, but I mean, I listened to that thinking, wow, I had no idea, you know, how sick I was going to be in just a few days. Why am I talking about myself? It's got nothing to do with me. Anyway, welcome to our program. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. An unemployed man from Wisconsin wins the $1 million Monopoly game by McDonald's. We're going to talk in a moment. David G. Hall, I think, is on the line with us from Pasadena tonight. Did Rex Ryan's wife, is she the one that put the foot fetish videos online originally? I guess we have to, we got to determine who did it, you know, sooner or later. Plus, a United States senator writes a letter to Santa Claus warning him about global warming. Well, that's very, very good of you, sir, as if Santa Claus were not far more aware of it than you living where he lives. Or did you not hear that Santa Claus, well, never mind. Jay Santos and David G. Hall with us tonight. Our number 877-876-PHIL. Affiliate Spotlight tonight, WHNZ 1250 AM in the great city of Tampa and WLEE 990 AM in Richmond, Virginia. And of course, our website, PhilHendryShow.com, for all of your Phil Hendry Show needs. And again, later on in the program, we have our Phil Hendry Christmas Carol. David G. Hall joining us from the Pasadena Mall tonight. David, you are on your way into dinner. Have you got time to talk about this?
Well, I do, Phil, because it's important to me. We were heading in actually to go see a movie, and we're going to see Burlesque, but I wanted to bring this out to you because I want you to, if you would, make a point of covering this story tonight, and your audience will understand when I tell them the story, and I think you will too, Phil, when you hear of this West Allis, Wisconsin man, and I've got, let me have the story. An unemployed West Allis man will have a much brighter Christmas, says the article, after winning a $1 million prize in the Monopoly game at McDonald's, which is what you read in the tease.
Right.
Now, this is a recession. There are people that are going without. There are people that are, in some instances, as tragic as this sounds, as incomprehensible as this may be, this is a recession, and there are people who are going without food, there are people who are without jobs, and there is real distress in the country. And I am personally offended, and I know a very large segment of your audience is personally offended, hearing about this man and his $1 million. There's nothing that I want to say regarding the man's so-called good fortune. He is unemployed. And let me just bring this to your attention. This guy is unemployed.
The guy that won the $1 million.
Right. Unemployed, has been unemployed, is hanging around at McDonald's all day long, drinking the coffee and doing whatever these people do. And if you drive by a McDonald's in the middle of the day more and more, that's what you see at a McDonald's. You see these guys just sitting around drinking their coffee or going up and getting a free refill or something like this. And now what happens is, as you and I are out working, and as the rest of your audience is out working, this man with a horseshoe someplace in his closet gets lucky and wins $1 million. And now we have to hear about it. You do, and I do. I think it is in the poorest taste. A guy that is unemployed for the last 18 months, by the way, 18 months. I think it's in the poorest taste possible and is offensive to the audience for this guy to talk about his $1 million that he won in this McDonald's game.
All right, I want to find out how he exactly won the $1 million, and we actually have this gentleman.
You're talking about the actuality you've got.
Right.
I would rather you not play that. What was that?
Hold on. We've got two things going at one time. What the hell is that, man? What is that? Turn that off, please. Yeah, thank you. All right. That was another. It was another piece of audio that was open. I have audio here, though, David, with this gentleman, Jonathan Keogh.
Right, and I would rather you not play the audio of this man. And I'll tell you why, Phil. It's for the very reasons that I've been giving. It's one thing for a man to do absolutely nothing with his life except sit around and drink free coffee and then have, you know, $1 million fall into his lap. It's worse to have this guy come on the air and start talking about it. You want to hear about a guy getting $1 million, that's bad enough. But then to listen to him himself, listen to the sound of his voice telling you how wonderful it is he won $1 million, I think is expecting too much from the audience to sit still for it.
Well, I mean, the guy is, his name is, can I give the name here?
Yeah, sure. It's Keogh, right?
Yeah, Jonathan Keogh. He was telling a Fox Channel 6 news crew that his $1 million win is thanks to a McRib.
Yeah, a McRib. And where did he get the money for a McRib? We'll never know. If he panhandled it. I am, on behalf of your audience, I am livid that a guy who is sitting and doing nothing for 18 months, most likely longer, wins $1 million and can't wait to tell the media and anybody that will listen about his $1 million that he has. I would love to say to this gentleman, Mr. Keogh, if he's listening at all, my name is David G. Hall, Mr. Keogh, and I'm the Vice President of Syndication for the Phil Henry Show. And I would tell you, sir, that there are those of us that work for a living. And while you sat there on the swing set, on the slide, or in the bounce house there at McDonald's, in the middle of a day with no children around, you and other homeless men and other unemployed men.
Well, we don't know that the guy was homeless.
What's that?
We don't know that he was homeless.
Well, he was unemployed for the last 18 months. He's hanging around at McDonald's. What do you suppose, if you were to draw a conclusion?
I don't know. That he was hanging around the McDonald's. Let me read the story. Jonathan Keogh won the one and only $1 million prize after pulling an instant tab affixed to a medium soft drink at the McDonald's at Highway 100 and National Avenue in West Dallas. He said, "Pinch me, somebody pinch me."
And I read that quote, and that was in a couple of the newspapers. And to rub it in like that, and that's what that is. That's not just him saying, "Aren't I lucky?" That's him saying, I've got $1 million and you don't. And I feel good today that I've got $1 million and you don't. I feel good that I can keep talking about it and rubbing it in. And as I was driving to work today and I was...
You know, can I interrupt?
Hold on. As I was driving to work today and I was listening to the various reports of this, I thought, you know, someone has to advocate on behalf of the other people out there that are in your audience, other unemployed people who are actually trying to get a job. And as well as people that are employed, that some bum sitting at McDonald's with a cup of coffee wins $1 million and decides to tell everybody how lucky he is, even though he didn't do a thing for it. I think it sends the wrong message, Phil, to so many people who will now waste their time at McDonald's trying to win money, trying to win some prize instead of going out and getting a job. Just go get a job instead of waiting at McDonald's for the lucky prize.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL. We're talking to David G. Hall about the man who won the $1 million prize from McDonald's in Wisconsin. I guess it's the, it says after winning $1 million prize, the one and the only $1 million prize. Now, across the country?
I don't know. I don't know how their contest is run, but I will tell you that this is about as lucky as a guy can get. And for a guy to win $1 million who's been sitting on his rear end doing nothing for 18 months and then proceeds to go to the media and say, look at me, look at me, look at me. I think it is an insult to every working man and woman. Now, the story that you were reading there, he says that he has some bills to pay and he owes his parents some money. He wants to see if he can buy some property, but he says he wants the money to last. He's a lifetime West Dallas resident. He worked in, listen to this, several different jobs, including construction. That basically says that he can't hold on to a job. He says it's a blessing and all of the things that you would expect. Go ahead and play the clip. I want people to listen to this man because I want you to listen to what a, really what I think is a usurious individual this guy is. Usurious and one of these self-inflated, self-promoting people.
I wasn't really that hungry, but I saw the McRib was back. So I got myself a McRib value meal and pulled off the two tickets on the cup, and it was Boardwalk and Park Place. I came back to McDonald's. I grabbed the assistant manager, and that's when I really knew something was happening. Because he went, oh, you know. And that's, I said, wow, you know, I think we're on to something here. Getting the check from Ronald, it kind of like, wow. It's like the sensory overload. It blew my mind a little bit, and it has been real jittery today.
Now, there's a real bright bulb there.
Well, he sounds like an everyman.
Well, you can call him an everyman if you want, but what's the reality? We know this. We know he was sitting at McDonald's for 18 months. We know that he didn't do anything with his life for 18 months. We know he was getting free coffee for 18 months, and now every working man and woman in America has got to listen to him and read about him.
David G. Hall. All right, David, hold on. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. Next hour, we also have Jay Sanos. 877-876-PHIL, the man that won $1 million from McDonald's. He was unemployed for 18 months, and now it's in all the newspapers. It's across the country. It's on the Internet. It's being reported. He won $1 million in this game. And to report this unemployed man winning $1 million is to rub it in. It's an insult to those of us who work for a living. Considering the fact that, you know, it's very, very likely you and I will never, ever, ever be that lucky. Your calls, and that's the only $1 million prize from across the country. Okay. Your calls at 877-876-PHIL, and then coming up, Jay Sanos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police, and then a Phil Henry Christmas carol later on tonight of the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Are people understanding?
I think so.
People have to be pissed about this.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here, world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Hold on. I think you get the kids to be quiet. We're in a hallway, and we've got a lot of children around, Phil.
All right, we're talking to David G. Hall about this West Dallas man, Mr. Keogh. The guy lives in Wisconsin. He won $1 million from McDonald's. And the $1 million that he won from McDonald's is for a Monopoly game. This was an unemployed guy, David, right?
Yeah, unemployed, 18 months. Unemployed, 18 months this guy was unemployed. And what message does this send? It sends the following message, that every blue-collar guy out there, every unemployed white-collar guy, every guy out there that may not be as motivated as for instance, I am or some of the people listening, I can tell you this much, Phil, if it were me, I'd give that money back. And I wouldn't even have let the money touch my hands. I would have said to the guy, I ain't touching that. If they'd said to me, well, you win $1 million. And
you'd give $1 million back, huh?
I wouldn't take it. I wouldn't take it. I'd say to them, with all due respect, I am a working man. I don't need your contest money. I ain't touching that.
This guy's unemployed.
All the more. Here's a guy, a Caucasian, sitting on a swing set at McDonald's, drinking his coffee every day. It is an insult to you and to me and to those people out there who may be tempted. It tells them, sit on your rear end long enough and McDonald's will send you a check.
Oh, boy, I don't see that.
Well, I personally, I do. I don't see how you don't see it. Sit on your rear end long enough and McDonald's will send you a check. All you got to do is go down to the end of the driveway and get your check for McDonald's. And I'll tell you the thing that scares me, Phil. McDonald's has become the place where we eat dinner. McDonald's is the place where we eat lunch. McDonald's is the place where we eat breakfast. McDonald's is the place where we take our children to enjoy themselves. McDonald's is the place where they have Ronald McDonald the Clown. McDonald's has now become the nanny corporation where you can sit in your house smoking a bowl full of, methamphetamine and go to the end of the driveway for the McDonald's check.
877-876-PHIL is the number here in the Phil Hendry Show. We'll take a phone call from Connie. Connie in Saldatna, Alaska. Connie, what is the name of that town there? Is that Saldatna? Is Connie there? She's not there. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Adam in Greensboro, North Carolina. Adam, you're on the Phil Hendry. Well, you're going to have to hold on now. No, go ahead, Adam. I can't read the clock.
Okay.
yes, sir, go ahead.
I just wanted to express that I don't really understand the anger pointed at the individual. I get the anger pointed at the corporation. I mean, I'm not particularly fond of McDonald's and the really poor health in the way of food that they bring. You know, I'm not particularly fond of the way they advertise with toys and things like that that have nothing to do with nutrition. Why is that paired with food?
I don't understand. Why would you be angry? Why would you be angry at the corporation? The corporation is just trying to promote its business. Here's a guy though that for 18 months is hanging around McDonald's, making people nervous, like maybe you and your wife or your kids, as he's getting his coffee and he's sitting there reading the same scrap of newspaper he's been reading for 6 months. And out of the blue, while you're at work, while you're working very hard, and while your wife and child are fighting to death of this guy, he gets $1 million.
I don't think he's making the choice to make the corporation put out that contest. That's just how the marketing world has turned, and he's had a windfall. I'd be happy about a windfall as well.
Do you think he deserves it?
This guy talk what? About his winnings and how offensive that is assuming that people have to sit and watch TV, which I think is a bit of a fallacy. I haven't had people
well, mind. You know, why would you give this guy a pass that you don't want to give McDonald's? You say the guy, you don't want to listen to this guy talk, but why do you go to McDonald's, you know? I think that this guy should have given the money back, but he keeps it.
Yeah, well, that's the part I don't understand. Because we don't know why he's been unemployed for 18 months yet. You can talk about how he's had, you know, a job here, a job there, but that doesn't make him an intrinsically poor person. You don't know his situation, and just kind of rail on him for who he is and just having a fortunate moment seems a little, I don't know, it just seems like misguided anger.
My question is this, okay? Would you keep the money?
I would have probably taken the money. I would have paid off debt belonging to my family and friends and
Do you have a job? Do you have a job?
I do. I have a job, yes.
All right. Then you don't need to keep
about
that money.
$30,000 a year in a small tech company.
You don't need to keep that.
Why not keep that money? This guy's working, he's $30,000 a year.
Well, he doesn't need to keep the money. I know that I would have given it back.
You know you'd give $1 million back.
Without question. See, you know, and I don't think I'm better than you, Phil, and I don't think I'm better than this gentleman. But let me just say this. There are some of us that can't be bought. And I'm one of them. I like to think that maybe someday you could be one of those people, Phil. I'd like to think that this young man that I'm talking to someday will be one of those people. But right now, neither one of you guys is that. Both of you guys can be bought. And
what does that mean, both of us can be bought? You know?
Did you just get done saying that you take $1 million just like him?
Well, what does that mean, we can be bought?
You can be bought by McDonald's. This guy was saying that the corporation shouldn't be held accountable, or should be, but at the same token, he can be bought. I am the kind of guy that can't be bought. And so when I look at a guy that can be bought, it bothers me.
All right, Adam, thanks for your phone call. I appreciate it. 877-876-PHIL. I don't think that... How do I respond to that? You know,
what do you mean, how do you respond to it?
Well, when you say that you can't be bought, meaning if you got $1 million prize for McDonald's, you wouldn't keep it. That means that anybody that gets $1 million prize from McDonald's and does keep it is what?
It's an individual who has said basically the following thing. I will surrender my dignity and I will surrender my pride and I'll stand there and I'll let a clown give me $1 million check on cardboard. If you think about that, if you think about how your dignity has to be stripped away in order for you to stand there and have the corporation photographer take your picture while a clown hands you a giant check You know, I got to tell you something, Phil. What if they told you you had to go into the bank and cash that giant check? Would you do that?
I guess I would, yeah.
See, to me, that shows no self-respect at all. Going into the bank with a clown to cash a giant check.
All right, David G. Hall is with us here as we talk about the man that won $1 million from McDonald's and how that's really not a good thing. He's an unemployed guy. It sends a bad sign to unemployed blue-collar people.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL.
Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL, as we talk to David G. Hall, who is the Vice President of Syndication and was inspired to give us a call here tonight, given the headline here about that unemployed man in Wisconsin who won the $1 million. A young man called, David, and said that it was, and we're going to get to your phone calls here in a moment, 877-876-PHIL, but there was a young man who called and said that it's more suspect for the corporation.
I don't agree with that at all. I think that's simplistic. Why would you attack a corporation that has spent money for promotion? I think it is, in my opinion, it shows a weakness. And Phil, let me tell you, let me cut to the chase here. I think everybody can understand this. We're in the middle of one of the worst recessionary periods in American history. We've had a lot of downtime economically in this country. This is one of the worst. We need a new way of thinking. We can't stand around like a bunch of yokels and hillbillies with our hands out waiting to win contests. Get to work. And when you sit at a McDonald's waiting for a soda or a bag of fries or whatever they do so that it has the right color tab so you can win yourself $1 million, I think is an indication of an old school way of thinking. We've got to have the pride and the courage and the integrity to say to that company, you know what, you can't buy me with your $1 million, keep it.
And well, it sounds almost angry. If McDonald's says congratulations.
Well, I can say congratulations, say thank you very much, McDonald's, but I'm the wrong guy. You got the wrong guy here. You got the wrong man here. You want to give away $1 million, and you want to have someone have their picture taken with a clown and a giant check walking into a bank trying to cash a big cardboard check. You got the wrong guy here. I've got integrity. And I've got pride, and I'm going to go out and work for a living and not have Ronald McDonald get his rocks off, excuse my language, taking his picture with me so he can see me squirm and look like an ass while I get my free money. No, not me.
And that's the way you look at all those people, huh?
What people?
People that win contests. That's the way you see them, a bunch of people that are their pride and their integrity, so they look stupid getting their picture taken with a giant check.
Yeah, so they can grab the money. Money, 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 money. Grab, 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 grab. You know, it was Vince Lombardi who very famously said so in that film about tackling. Grab, grab, grab. Everybody grabbing out there. Nobody tackling. Everybody grab it.
All right, 877-876-PHIL here with David G. Hall. Here is Connie. We got Connie back here in Soldotna, Alaska. Go ahead, Connie.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that I'm appalled listening to David talk about this guy. He's being very judgmental. He knows nothing about the man that won the money. We don't know if he's homeless.
Well,
we don't know. He may be unemployed, but yes, you're right. There's a lot of Americans unemployed. And it's a game. That's his luck of going in. That's his right to go in and do a game and win.
Yeah.
I tip my hat off to him
for
Christmas, and you're not being very Christian about it.
Well,
you're almost being very jealous.
Christian is someone that would give, but this man is like so many of us. He wants to tank. He wants to see where he can get his free check. And I think we live in a welfare state. And I think the attitude is the following thing, especially with a company like McDonald's. Let me go down to McDonald's and get some breakfast. Oh, it's lunchtime. Better go get some lunch at McDonald's. Hey, look at this. It's dinner time. Better go get my lunch and my dinner. And I think that when I get up this morning, I'll go down to the mailbox after I finish off my bottle of whiskey and see if McDonald's sent me my $1 million check. I mean, this is nanny state gone mad.
What are you talking about, man? It's a McDonald's is a fast food restaurant.
Did I just lay out for you the cycle of life? That's what it is, ma'am. With all due respect to this lady in Alaska, I have to say that a man who is going to sit on a swing set where children sit, ma'am, do you have children?
I do.
All right. Where your children like to play at the McDonald's sandlot or whatever they have, I'm sure you've seen it. No, not your kids. Some guy, some 35-year-old, excuse my language, bum, on a swing set waiting for his million. I beg your pardon?
Do we know that this gentleman is a bum?
I think you can draw that conclusion. Look at the facts of his life. He hasn't worked for 18 months. Well,
you know,
he hasn't worked for 18 months. He's in the construction business.
What about the construction business?
That could be very seasonal work. I'm driving from Anchorage, Alaska to Soldotna, Alaska, and so my radio is going in and out of coverage. That is so
doesn't that tell you that the
judgmental
the radio,
of what you are saying.
The radio is not doing
so
its job
judgmental.
Tonight. No, ma'am.
Pardon me?
The radio is cheating. The radio is cheating you tonight. It's not doing its job. You're driving. You're doing what you should do, but the radio is trying to get away with murder. Okay, I think I'll give her a little bit of the show, now I'm going to fade out. Now I'm going to give her a little bit of the show, now I'm going to fade out.
No.
That's what the way most people are.
No.
I think I'll work, and now I'll sit on my can and wait for my check.
You know what? I agree with Connie. I got to agree with Connie because, what's wrong with a man having a little bit of good fortune?
And what's wrong with a man standing up and saying, thank you very much, Ronald McDonald, but today you don't get to have your picture taken. You don't get to have your picture taken with a man. I got integrity. Take your million-dollar check and stick it.
God.
Well,
all right, Connie, I appreciate ahead, ma'am.
I hope this man takes the money and somehow tracks you down and uses that money and sues you.
Sues me for what? For having an opinion? I don't think so, ma'am.
What you are doing is awful. Good luck to that man. I hope
he's
uses his money wisely.
Probably
I hope he spends the money wisely
dollars.
And maybe he gives it to charity to help out someone else misfortunate. But we don't know if he's a drunk or homeless.
They never use the money wisely. They never use it wisely. Give it up.
You are very
well.
Bitter.
You don't know that.
And Merry Christmas, sir.
Yeah, I wish I had the money. Yeah.
Thank you very much for your call, Connie. That I think sort of that didn't redound positively.
What didn't?
That phone call.
Oh, I thought I came away. I thought I made my point. You know, she's a very nice lady. I wasn't attacking her. But
well, she went away from the phone call thinking that you're selfish and that you have no Christian spirit, especially here at the holiday season. Sean in Rochester, New Jersey, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show, sir.
Hi. First of all,
yes, sir.
Phil, thank you very much for taking my call. Second of all,
yes, sir.
I couldn't disagree more with your guest. The fact that this man hasn't worked for 18 months really should have nothing to do with it. This is America after all, right? You can win the Powerball, you can win the national lottery. The fact that he hasn't worked really should have nothing to do with it. He won this fair and square.
Guys are now going to wait around for the Powerball to go out and get some work done. That's what's going to happen. And I think increasingly that's what's happening. And with all due respect to you, sir, what are you going to do? Are you going to go out and get some work done or are you going to wait for Powerball?
Well, you know, I'm going to get work done, of course, first of all. You got to take care of business. But,
right.
Like I said, we can't pick on this guy because he got lucky. He deserves it. He won it fair and square.
I think that luck is not anything that brings us a sense of what needs to be done. I think that guy, and I hate to say it, I think you're going to see him blow through that on drugs and alcohol. And
wow, man, why would you say that? You don't know anything about this guy.
I just have a sense.
Exactly.
Drugs and alcohol, $1 million? You heard what the gentleman said. He wanted to buy a house. He wanted to buy some property. He wanted to pay off some bills. Everything he said was a very sensible, I think, look at investing as well as paying off his debt.
Yeah, sure. That's what they all say. They all say that. But I will tell you this, Sean. I'm the kind of guy that this guy's got his radio turned up like a retard. Turn him down.
Watch that. Please don't use that word because we get phone calls.
What?
The word you just used.
Oh, brother. The point I'm trying to make, Phil, is this. I don't take money, okay? I don't take money. I've got integrity. No one could buy me. Now, you know as well as I do.
Come on, let me ask you a question.
Hold on. You know as well as I do that I've got integrity. And no one walks up to me with $1 million and says, you can have this so long as you get your picture taken with that guy in an orange wig. Not going to happen.
Let me ask you something, David, okay?
Yeah.
You were a very heavy contributor and heavy supporter of President Obama, right, during the campaign?
Yes, I was, and I'm very proud of that.
All right, fine. Is it true that you spent or will be spending a night at the White House as a result of your contributions?
Hold on for a second there, Caballero. That's a completely different thing.
Well, wasn't it true, though, that you contributed when they said that...
I contributed to President Obama.
All right, but didn't they say that a certain number is going to get you spending the night at the White House?
They said to me, you know, you don't have any right to...
Well, no, if you're on my show right now saying that you can't be bought, and then you tell me that you told me that you are going to spend a night at the White House for a certain price...
I didn't say a certain price.
You said that it cost a certain amount of money to contribute to President Obama to spend a night at the White House.
So what if it did?
Well, aren't you being bought? You're giving money so you can get something.
No, they're buying me.
How are they buying you? You're getting the night at the White House, but you contributed money to get that.
I'm a working man. Here's the thing that's really making me angry now. You're trying to turn this around, and you're trying to stick it right back up mine. This guy that we're talking about was the guy that we were talking about who is the object of our discussion, and you've decided to twist this just at the moment that we were zeroing in on this guy. You've turned it around, you've twisted my wrist around, and you've stuck it right back up mine. And I find that to be very, wow.
What are you talking about, man? All I'm saying is if you say that you can't be bought and you have integrity and this guy took $1 million, you paid the Obama campaign so you could spend the night at the White House.
So what? So I gave him some money.
You did that for that specific purpose.
Don't you buy things?
Yes, I buy things. All the time. But I thought you believed in President Obama.
I do believe in President Obama.
All right, then you could have given him the money and not taken the night at the White House.
I don't see it that way, and I think that, you know what, not only do I not see it that way, you're insane. You're insane.
I'm not insane at all. If you believed in President Obama, you'd contribute to his campaign for the things that he does to help him get reelected as you, I'm sure, want him to, and that you would not take a night at the White House.
I think the way you're talking now, boy, you need a duck.
No, I do not. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Phil in Jackson, Mississippi. Phil, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show with David Hall.
I think this guy's, anybody's going to take a check if it's a prize. It's not like he's out there, you know, on the street corner doing whatever for money. This guy's, you know, if you want a prize, it's a prize. It's a contest of some sort. And this guy's an idiot. He says he wouldn't take a check because if somebody came up with $1 million, he's going to take it. I guarantee you his story would change.
No way. I would not do it. You know why? I'll tell you why. Because when they give you that $1 million, Phil, this is what they want you to do. Stand there with Ronald McDonald with a big crap-eating grin on your face, and then go into the bank with the big cardboard check so you can look like a real ass. That's what they...
Well, then you know what? I'd be happy to look like an ass and have my picture taken with a clown in a red wig.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. You sell out.
Because that means I got $1 million and you don't.
You sold out for that million with the clown wig.
What are you talking about? That guy's got no problem with
that. If it helps pay my bills and helps put food on my kids' table.
Would you put on a woman's dress?
Whoa! Hold on for a minute, because David, now what you're doing is you're taking a contest by McDonald's and you're turning it into some sort of a demeaning and humiliating exercise.
That's exactly what it is. That's what I'm trying to tell you guys. And some guy that's sitting around on the swing set at the McDonald's playpen, and then he gets his $1 million. How will he ever be able to look at himself in the mirror again, knowing that that face that he's looking at was also next to the face of a guy in an orange wig? Think of that.
I'd be able to look at myself in the mirror every day and know that because of that money, my kids won't have to worry about college. My kids won't have to worry about food or clothes or anything. And you know what? I would still work every day.
What if people kept saying to you, hey, Ronald, oh, I'm sorry, hey, Phil. What if they kept calling you Mr. McDonald?
Oh, you know, what you're doing now, David, is you're just talking about being embarrassed. You're not talking about pride. Phil, thanks for your call, sir. 877-876-PHIL. Chuck in Boston, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
How you doing?
I'm telling you.
Yes, sir.
I misread your guest initially. I thought he was a right winger, but I think he's just making an argument to create some controversy. Look at it this way. The guy wins $1 million. He's going to have to pay $400,000 in taxes, and he'll help reduce the deficit.
He'll help reduce the deficit.
Right, but he's going to pay $400,000 in taxes.
That money came from the McDonald's budget. And the McDonald's budget is a part of a larger operating capital that McDonald's has, and that capital gets taxed too. So it's getting taxed whether McDonald's has it or whether this guy's got it. See what I'm saying? In other words, McDonald's has got the money, he's got the money, it's getting taxed.
Not necessarily.
Why?
Because if that's part of corporate expense, it's going to be taxed at a corporate rate, not a personal income tax rate. And it might be much less in terms of the tax breaks that we're trying to give companies.
No, Obama said
he's going to have to pay the tax.
He's got to pay the income tax as opposed to the corporation.
He's going to pay $400,000 in income tax.
You know something? What do you know about the tax code, Henry?
I happen to own a company, so I know about the tax. I know the individual as opposed to corporate.
Big man.
Company too.
God.
The guy that wins the money has to pay tax on it. He's going to pay $400,000.
I know that, sir. But I'm saying to you that if McDonald's held onto the money, they got to pay taxes on it too. Now what they're doing is they're giving it to him, and he's the guy that gets his picture taken with a guy in an orange wig, and McDonald's gets away scot-free.
Scot-free from what?
You see anybody at McDonald's having their picture taken with a clown?
What difference does it make?
Do you really believe... what you're saying, in other words, do you really believe that this guy, how do you know the situation the guy's in?
Well, I know what's in it. Listen to this, sir.
A friend of mine put an ad in the paper yesterday in Boston for a truck driver. He got 40 applicants within 2 hours. So you think it's that easy for somebody to get a job? It isn't. And we're not that bad off here in New England.
Here's a guy, 18 months out of work, sitting around on the swing set.
How do you know he's on a swing set? You've been talking about this swing set thing.
Well, what do you think he's doing with his time? What's he doing with his time? He's unemployed. He can afford a McRib sandwich, which I find pretty weird.
The guy doesn't have any money. He's got to go to McDonald's.
That's an expensive meal, sir.
Not compared to, you know what?
Let me ask you something. If you're broke, you're going to McDonald's, you're buying groceries. I think this guy is all wrong. He's wrong. There's something wrong about him.
All right, listen, thank you very much. Chuck, thank you for your call, sir. 877-876-PHIL. Let's take a break here and get away from the mall there where David is surrounded by little kids. And next thing you know, he'll be surrounded by guys in orange wigs, maybe, which seems to be his preoccupation. This man who got the $1 million from McDonald's, is he a sellout? Is he a guy who represents the old way of doing things? Win contests, have your picture taken with McDonald's. Would you give the money back? That's what David says he'd do. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Come on!
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Coming up next hour, Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. In our final hour, it is a Phil Hendry Christmas Carol here on the night before Christmas Eve, which is the Christmas Eve before 2010 Christmas. David, we're talking about the gentleman in Wisconsin who won $1 million for McDonald's, Mr. Jonathan Keogh, who you pretty much have written off as a guy that is an opportunist. He's not he doesn't represent the best in us. He's a contest winner. We've had people saying that it's unfair of you to be attacking a contest winner.
I'm just going to tell you this. If I was unemployed and I was living in my car, and I was living in my car under a bridge in the worst part of town, and I hadn't bathed and I hadn't eaten, and someone walked up to me from McDonald's and said, here's $1 million for drinking a McDonald's cherry Coke or whatever, I'd say, you know what I'd do with it? I would take it from the guy, and excuse me for saying this, but I'd you know when the guy goes... you know that?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Well, you know what I mean, right?
Yes.
I'd hawk into it, fold it nicely, and stick it back in his pocket. That's the kind of integrity I've got. Now, a lot of guys have talents for different things. What I've had in my life is a talent to have integrity and to say, what's that? Excuse me? $1 million? Really? I lift my leg to it.
877-876-PHIL. Time for a call here. One more from Beth in Lawrence, Kansas, listening on KLWN. Go ahead, Beth. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Okay. I'm just like the other
Hi.
Person. I thought this guy was a, you know, somebody who's an idiot. But actually, I think he's creating a ruckus with a lot of people, and he's going to be bringing people together. Of course, I would be more than happy to take a picture with McDonald's. My daughter would have college. My daughter would have a winter jacket. She would have shoes. Food on the table.
You could earn that money. You could earn that money. You could have a job and
Absolutely.
Earn that.
Absolutely. You know, it's so
okay,
funny.
Okay, why not do that?
There's no arguing with you because the points that you're making are heartless, they're callous, and they're from left field.
They're real.
They're not real. Obviously,
real
you have
points.
The money that's necessary to live the way you need to live.
Not necessarily.
The haves and the have-nots are wide, and obviously you're a have. And you're just trying to create, you're trying to
I'm trying to test you. I'm testing you to find out just how low you'd go to have some guy with an orange wig hand you money.
Oh, will you knock it off with the orange wig? Thank you very much, Beth. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
I think they shouldn't even have the book read to the school, period.
This is appropriate.
This is a new metal band. I always go, give me the top 10 of the new
Well, obviously, we have a rapist.
Stripped from a basket.
But have really beautiful feet.
World famous Phil Henry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, we take you through the looking glass and beyond, places where other talk shows wish they could go, but they can't. Forget it. No way, man. Truth is our bitch on this show. 877-876-PHIL. We're online at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. And don't forget that tonight at our last hour, in other words, about 60 minutes from now, will be Phil Henry's Christmas Carol. This is our second year, and it was recorded live last year, so we will replay it for you, as we are big, big believers here in live comedy, even though it was recorded live 1 year ago. Now then, so we're going to have that, and by Christmas, we will also have uploaded some 20 Classic Phil podcasts. Right? And so there's always something happening over there. Go to our website, get a backstage pass, and figure it out, man, because it's a beautiful thing. And right now you can look at live streaming video of our show. And I got to tell you, we looked for the video of last year's Christmas Carol. It has since gone the way of Amelia Earhart. It's a very, very large video file, so we save what we can. And it was before our website redesigned, but we did not save that video. We do have, however, the broadcast. So check our website, too, for affiliates in your locale. 877-876-PHIL. After a wave of parcel bombs hit Rome on Wednesday, the United States warned Americans to be on high alert for terror attacks in the United States as the holiday weekend begins and Americans overseas to hand over any suspicious packages to police. Joining us here on our newsmaker line is Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. Mr. Santos is a part of a Citizens Auxiliary Force, a volunteer force in the South Bay. And, Jay, how are you tonight?
Well, Bill, we're doing about as well as can be expected. Any time you go up to a holiday weekend like this, you do have some trepidation, a little bit of a little bit of nervousness. I think we're prepared and we stand ready to take a peek if we have to over the shoulder police, see how things are.
Now, what you guys do is you say that you, as a Citizens Auxiliary Police, you are there to make sure the police are doing a good job.
Well, it's not just making sure that the police are sort of dotting the I's and crossing the T's, but it's also to assist. If we see where they probably could use some help, if, for instance, we've got a very heavy weather night. We've had a lot of very bad weather here over the last few days, and so we would go out and do a flare drop, which is to funnel all the traffic down into one lane, get away from some of that heavy water that a lot of the police may not ask us to do, but we do anyway because we know they're too busy to think of everything, and if we see something obvious like that, we're going to do it.
Now, with the security situation the way it is worldwide and the way it has been worldwide since 9/11, they have told Americans that to watch packages. These are Americans that are living overseas and Americans that are traveling. You're not necessarily at the airports, right?
No, we are here, as are other citizens, auxiliary police agencies throughout the country, sort of, you know, standing by and doing what we can for the home front. So we're a part of the same effort, which is to make sure that everything that we are transporting, everything that we may be, what you want to call, just, you know, buying or taking from our car, however we want to say it, is safe. And so what we do here with the Citizens Auxiliary Police out of our substation, which is Randy Gleason, his wife is going to, I think she's going to be leaving early for San Diego, which is where their family's going to be, so we will have use of their kitchen, their basement, their kitchen as a substation, and that's where we will be able to take whatever we are able to confiscate and to open it and look at it.
Well, what exactly, when you say what you're able to confiscate?
Well, what we have determined, and I think a lot of police have overlooked this, I think perhaps an awful lot of our security apparatus in this country, because they're really overstretched, is if you drive down any street in America, especially on a week like this one, a week before Christmas, you see getting out of cars, getting out of station wagon, getting out of SUV, individuals carrying, what, large packages. They're carrying bags of packages. They're carrying large boxes. They're carrying small packages. And those packages are leaving those vehicles, and they are entering a residence without any interdiction, without any police interdiction or any investigation. And these packages are, in other words, being transported from point A to point B to point C without any law enforcement looking at them to see if they are suspect. And I certainly don't think that they are.
You're talking, though, about private packages. Is that right?
Well, yes, but, I mean, anything is a private package. You get on an airplane, it's a private package. You know.
No, I understand that. It's your private luggage, you mean?
Yes, private luggage.
All right. But this is not anybody traveling on an airplane. This is someone who has it in their private vehicle.
Well, they've taken it from a store, and they have thus transported it in their car to their driveway. They are getting out of their car. Now it's going into the home.
Well, before we ask about exactly how you might look at packages like that, what are you suspecting could happen?
Well, with packages like that, it can be anything, Phil, and this is the very insidious part of terrorism. You don't know how to predict how these people are going to react because they're so unpredictable and just very crazy, I think is the word you want to say. And if they're going to take a package out of their car and transport it into a home, it's very possible that they may want to detonate some kind of a device that's not only going to take out that house, take out a row of houses on that street. However, we don't necessarily think that's the case. What we think more is likely is, in much the same way the Weather Underground or some different, you know, terrorism and kind of hippie people did, is that they are transporting bombs that are disguised as Christmas packages or could be disguised as a holiday package, taking it into the house, using it, opening it up, obviously, and using it there inside the house. So any home can become a safe house. Any home can become a bomb-making factory. And all you're looking at is a woman or children or a man leaving their vehicle with these very brightly decorated packages.
We're talking to Jay Sanis of the Citizens Auxiliary Police here as we approach this Christmas weekend and we hear of the terrible events in Rome, the embassy bombings in Rome. This was not the United States embassy that was attacked. Forgive me, but I was looking for the embassy. There was an embassy that received some kind of package. And if it was the American embassy, then I apologize. I didn't think it was. We'll find out. But the fact is that there have been some there's incidents that are taking place that the American people are being asked to be on high alert for. It was the Rome embassy. I understand that. Of what country? I know it was in Rome. It was the United States Embassy. Do you know, Jay?
I do not know.
The Swiss Embassy. Okay, I've been waiting for the information, and the Chilean Embassy. 877-876-PHIL. So, you know, a bomb-making factory. So, in other words, you got people that are taking bombs into the house.
Well, and you have bomb-making materials, what I'm saying.
In homes, in the suburbs.
In the homes and suburbs. What we're saying, Phil, is you drive down any street in America, go down a street, and what are you going to, you know, you just drive down a regular street, what are you going to see? You're going to see a lady getting out of a car, or a man getting out of a car, or children, and what do they have? They have packages. What's in that package? Well, I guess what I could do is assume that it's a Christmas present.
But you're saying, how do you know it's not bomb making material?
That's exactly right.
All right. So how do you then talk to these people?
Well,
how do you stop someone who's getting out of their van with a Christmas presents and ask to look at those Christmas presents?
Well, that's something that's very, very easy to do, but you have to know your business. I know my business. I know what my rights are. And I do know that you can certainly pull up and you can ask a question. We have a van, and we do have a sign on the van that says Citizens Auxiliary Police. We will pull up and we will look at the individual and say, you know, good afternoon, how are you doing, or good evening. Can you tell me what's in that package? Now, once they engage you in conversation by saying something along the lines of, well, why do you ask, or they stand and they look at you. If they're walking away from you and they turn around and look at you, then they pretty much have the right to walk away. But if they, it's called a permissive responsiveness clause, Phil.
And what is permissive responsiveness clause?
It means that if they're standing looking at you front ways, holding the package and saying, well, what do you want, or however, you say, okay, now they, you know, pretty much have given me. So that's when I get out of the van. I say, could I look in and see what's in, you know, just check the package out. And you continue to move toward them. Now, you're not being threatening, but you say, I want to look at the package. And
I want to look at the package.
And if it's a bag of packages or something like that, you tell them, we are only here to check to make sure that what is contained in that package is not something that is dangerous or could, you know, I don't want to say it, but it could blind a man or, you know, blow his hands off. And so we do say to the people, you may have material that could explode and blind, you know, just, you know, rip into someone's face. So they look like that one lady that, you know, when that, I don't know if you saw that one lady.
And, okay, I understand that, Jay. I don't need you to be graphic.
Well, that's all right, but I have to tell these people.
You have to tell them that they may have bomb-making material, and so therefore you need to look at it.
That's correct.
And what if they say, no, you may not?
It depends on whether they said, no, you may not, as they're walking away, or if they said, no, you may not, looking at me. If they say, no, you may not, looking at me, they have just engaged me in what is called a permissive responsiveness clause. So they're talking to me, which validates my authority.
Okay, let's say they've validated your authority, and then what?
Then I get out of the car very slowly, and I say, may I please look at it? And that's when I'll say, do you realize you could have a package there that could contain explosives that could, if it blows up, rip, you know, you don't want me to say.
Are you being graphic with these people?
You have to be. You have to say to them, you have a package there that if it explodes, it could just, cave your nose in. If you saw that one, well, you don't want me to talk about it. But
no, I'd rather you not talk about it. I'd rather you not.
Well, today we had a man, his hands got blowed off, I think.
I don't know anything about it, but I will tell you that that's a hell of a way to approach somebody. May I look at your package, because it may have explosives that will tear your face off or something like that.
Well, this is the dangerous. So we do need to see what people are taking out of their cars to their houses. And I don't know any other way of saying it.
Well, how about if you just went up to them and said, we have a concern that there are packages of explosives floating around the city that may be transported into homes, that may be a part of a larger plot to use various houses as bomb-making factories. Do you mind if we look at your packages?
Well, that's essentially what we're saying.
And if they say no?
Well, if they say no, then we do have a situation.
And well, if they say no, you got to move on, don't you?
Well, I'm not about to move on, Phil, and I don't think you wouldn't either. If you knew that what that lady's got in her bag could blow someone's I don't want to say nothing that's offensive.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL with Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police as we talk about the this weekend, this high security alert weekend, and the possibility that people that are transporting boxes and packages out of their cars into their homes, those boxes and packages need to be looked at. And that the Citizens Auxiliary Police this weekend will be driving down streets and stopping and talking to people who are taking packages out of their cars. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Be back with more from Jay Santos.
Phil Hendry. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL with Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. There were a couple of terrorist attacks in Rome at the Swiss and Chilean embassies. Authorities have warned Americans to be vigilant of Christmas terror attacks. But right here at home, Jay and the Citizens Auxiliary Police are warning against the possibility of people turning their homes into bomb-making factories. Are we talking about specific people?
Well, we may be, Phil, but It's not anything that I can really talk about, because if I do, then we are profiling. I don't want to profile, so I have to say that everyone is a potential suspect.
And so you could be driving down any street, seeing people getting out of their cars with packages for Christmas, and stop and want to look at those packages.
I have to, yes. Otherwise, if I just do it in a certain kind of neighborhood, they're going to say, well, you know, what are you doing?
And you don't want to tell me where it is you should be looking.
Well, I mean, really, anywhere. We don't know. But if I see a woman getting out of a car, she looks perfectly normal. She's got three children with her, or two, or one, or she's, you know, however, I don't know. I still got to suspect that it's possible that woman, as crazy as it sounds, may want to blow, blow it all over. You know, and so I have to look at that, and it's unfortunate, and I don't want to do it, but what choice do I have when it's possible she could have something in that box that's going to blow your, take your head off.
877-876-PHIL, Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. Should people who are getting out of their cars with packages be looked at? Here's Charles in Greensboro, North Carolina. Charles, go ahead.
You know, this is crazy. You know, I'm almost a 19-year veteran in the United States Army, and I'm gonna tell you right now.
Yes, sir.
If this guy comes up to me in my driveway with whatever he has on the side of his van and asks me what I have in my package, that's none of his business. And if I choose to tell him no, he can't look at it, and he says that there's a situation and you're on my property, that means guess what? Either you stop trespassing, or then I have every reason to, by any means necessary, at that point, to get you off of my property. That's crazy. You're talking about...
We have on the side of the van Citizens Auxiliary Police.
Okay,
and all I'm asking
auxiliary
is...
Police. Citizens
you know
Auxiliary
what's in that
Police
package.
Is irrelevant.
You,
that's like saying
you, know what's
you
in
have
that
a
package.
Clown squad on the side of your car. You have no
well, no,
right...
it doesn't say that. It doesn't say that, sir.
You have no right to approach anybody and say, hey, I want to look in your package. Do you know... Just for a second,
can I ask you a question?
That.
Let me ask you a question. Do you want a bomb-making factory next to your house? Do you want a bomb-making factory next to your house? That's what I'm asking.
But wait.
You think about it for a second. I'm with my family. I'm going into my house, and we're all carrying Christmas gifts, and you approach me.
Exactly.
I don't know you from Adam.
Right.
No, I don't know you. I don't know what you want, and I don't have to answer your question.
Well, let me interject something here, Charles, because did you not say, Jay, that if the man turns and is walking away from you...
If he turns and is walking away from me, then I have to stop and get back in a van. But if he stands and looks at me and talks to me, then he's giving me the permission responsiveness clause.
Which means what?
What makes you think for a second that I'm not going to stand and look at you in that situation? First of all, who are you? So yes,
you're going to get engaged.
You are. Who are you, and what do you want? Can I look in your?
If
package?
I say to you,
no.
If I say to you, can I look in your package? And you just turn, you look over your shoulder and you say, "Get lost," and keep walking. I got to turn around and get lost.
But guess what? I've got my family with me. So I'm going to make sure that I'm looking at you, because I don't know who you are from Adam. So it's up to me to protect my family. So guess what? I've engaged you, and I tell you no. Now what's your next move?
Well, that's the problem then, because you've turned and looked at me, and you've basically given me permission to say, could I, you know, look in it, or could I look at it? And you'll say no, and I'll say, okay, we've got a situation, because, and then I would say, I try to appeal to you as a husband and father. I'd say, you don't want a bomb-making factory next to your house, do you? And you'd say no.
I'd say, well, neither do those. You're crazy, and I'm going to tell you to get out of here. Now what's your next move?
Well, my next move then would be to start talking and, you know, relax you by talking about baseball or football or whatever. As
I'm not
going to subcommanders.
I'm going to go on in the house. What's your next move?
Well, that's what you should have done in the first place.
Well, no, you just said that if he turns around and goes in the house.
Right. Then I can't. But then
well, that's not going to happen. We're going through a scenario. Now I'm going to tell him I've already engaged you. You've already said it. I'm telling you no. I told him to leave and go in my house. According to you, we do have a situation. What's your
Well, what we would do then is what we would do then is just say, you know, you got a really nice house here, and try to get you to drop
the
package.
What's your next move?
Oh, you're going in the house. Then we have to follow you up onto the.
No, wait a minute. Now you're like you're on the guy's property, right?
Yeah, well, yes, because he gave me the permission, the permissive responsiveness clause.
I don't know what that is. Is that something in the Constitution or?
That is part. Yeah, constitutionality. Where if they engage you, now he's leaving, and then we have to try to get him to drop the package, which would be that there's a, you know, it sounds ridiculous, but I'd say something like, you know, there's a worm crawling on that package, or it looks like, you know, anything to get him to drop it and go. Most people don't like snails or anything like that, so we try to get him to go, ooh, you know, and drop it.
Okay, and if he didn't go, ooh, and drop it, then what?
Then I would just say, wait a minute, let me just see that, and I just try to take it from him. So that's what I would do.
All right, anyway, Charles, thanks for your call here. 87 stunned, you know.
If I were him, I'd be stunned, too.
Yeah, I'd be stunned. If I would be stunned, too, looking at you with your pith helmet. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with Jay Sanders of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Ooh.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, 877-876-PHIL with Jay Sanders of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. We have before us a question, Jay, that's a good question. I don't think it was entirely answered by the by yourself for that caller, which is, if you and the Citizens Auxiliary Police pull up to a home where you see people getting out of their cars with Christmas to take into the house, okay, and that individual has engaged you and has decided they will now turn around and go back to the house anyway, how do you get those packages away from them if you want to look at them?
Well, there are a couple things you can do, Phil. I don't want to... we have in the past attempted to strong-arm people. That's not worked out too good because the police have generally interceded. And police, they get territorial. They don't want to be made to look bad. And if we are... If we do... Especially if we do something better than they do, they get very upset. We carry what we call two interdiction items. They are two aversion items that generally work. One of them is a Black Widow spider that you can drop on the package as the person is walking away and say, "Oh, God." And you make it sound like, "Oh, God, there's a Black Widow." They'll generally drop it. The other is, and I don't want to, you know, gross anybody out, but the other is vomit, or fake vomit, I should say. It's a rubber vomit. You've seen it in the joke shop, and what we do then is we'll say, "Oh, geez," you know, or whatever you would say if someone had, you know, if you looked at the throw up, and you throw it on the cement behind them, they'll turn around to look at this barf, and that's when they let loose the bag. So we don't do anything that is going to try. In other words, we don't try to take anything from anybody. We encourage them to let go of it, and they will with a Black Widow or the fake barf.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, Jay Sanders of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. Here is Christopher in El Paso. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. Being a former GSA screener and currently in the U.S. Army and high school government class, there is I believe it's the Fourth Amendment to get married, that prohibits search and seizures of police officers. The only time they could search and seize an item is if that individual is committing an illegal act, whether it be speeding, theft, blinker light, something. He is going after people with privately owned packages into their own house, and they have not even committed a crime.
That's true.
His behavior is illegal.
Well, what if they drop the package?
Repeat that.
That's what we're doing. If they drop the package, I said, what if they drop the package? If they drop the package, as we have asked them to do, then we have the right to pick it up and, you know, look at it.
You
can shake it.
You are illegally.
If they drop it, if I say to someone, oh, God, there's throw up.
Well, that's coercion, right, Christopher?
Well, actually, you are committing harassment, and the police don't even do that. You're committing harassment.
How am I harassing them?
You're calling up to them on their private residence. You're coming up to them, hassling them. All right. And
I'm not hassling them. What I'm trying to do is I can engage them in a conversation if they want to respond to me. And I say, you know, your bags and your boxes. I mean, you mind tell me, have you got bombs in there? And they'll say no. And of course, I'm gonna say, well, yeah, right, sure. I don't know if you're telling me the truth.
Right.
And so, if that house blows up later, then I am responsible for not having done my job as a citizen's auxiliary policeman.
All right, I'm going to
See what I mean? So
okay, I'm going to
You need to.
Okay. Turn me off, okay? I am currently in the U.S. Army where I've been for 3 years, okay? Law abiding as all get. Should you approach me about my package and stuff? No. I'll just pretty much wait. I'll be honest. No, man, just go away. Should you go beyond that, you have crossed the line into harassment. That I do have the right to defend myself, and the so-called results of bombs blowing up, will happen to you, but with my bare hands. Okay.
Well,
basically, you're just
saying how do you figure you've been threatened by a piece of rubber fake throw up? See that you can't tell the cop.
Anyone, you drop a spider or something, rubber vomit.
What's with this black? You put a black widow.
It's a rubber spider. It looks like a black widow.
So what you're doing? That's what the man said. It's harassment. You got a fake spider and fake throw up.
Yeah.
And what are you doing?
I'm trying to get the guy to drop the package. That's all.
Okay.
I just want to be clear. You're going to beat me up because I put a rubber spider on your package? Wow. You're wrapped around tight.
What crime have you committed that you have the right to inspect the package?
Because of the terrorisms that are going on and everything, and they just blew up an embassy and stuff, and there's a lot of stuff going on. And you're in the Army. I don't know about that.
All right, look, let's move on. I appreciate very much your call, but I think the man's made a good point, and that is if you are on his property and you're hearing everybody saying the same thing.
I hear everyone. Mr. Henry, and I can take care of this situation quicker than people would suspect if they would just, you know, shut their mouths and just back away from me and let me just look at it. Just start looking at a package. All I got to do is look at it, walk around it, look at it. You can even sniff the air around it and go, okay, this is good, go ahead. But, I mean, if you're going to turn into a whole big thing, it'll only take a few seconds. And with the rubber fake spider or the rubber vomit, it'll get people's minds off the package just long enough for them to drop it. I'll take a look, and we're done. But if that guy's gonna make a big thing out of it, he's gonna call the police because I put a rubber spider on him. I think that's.
Well, look, people don't know what you're about. You're pulling up with your van with your citizens auxiliary police sign. You got a rubber spider and rubber throw up.
You may find it funny, Mr. Henry, but people got injured today.
I know people got injured. I understand that. And that was a very real attack. Now you're talking about looking at packages in people's homes. JR in Orlando, Florida. Go ahead, JR. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Jay Santos.
Mr. Santos, I've got a question for you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
What is your probable cause? What is your justifiable reason for wanting to look into my packages? Just because I'm getting out of my car?
They could contain bomb-making material.
You are full of garbage.
Why?
You are full of crap. You are not a cop. You do not belong to the... Shut up and let me finish. You do not belong to the SS. You do not belong to the Gestapo. And you have absolutely no authority to do this.
The Citizens Auxiliary Gator
Brigade. You come onto my property and you try to take something away from me or make me drop
it.
Right. I will turn around and pound you into the ground like a damn tent stake. You have attacked me on my property. Whether you throw fake
teak
on me or a fake spider, I don't care. That is an attack. You have absolutely no authority whatsoever. You have absolutely no justification or probable cause to want to know what I have in packages that I am taking out of my car going into my home.
In your opinion,
you are a fraud. You are a creep is what you are. And you think you are a cop.
You're afraid of a rubber spider.
You are a pathetic little wannabe.
I find that very strange, sir, that you'd be afraid of, like, fake throw-up.
I'm not afraid of fake throw-up, and by the way, I collect spiders, so your little black widow might become a pet. You are an absolute fraud, sir. You are a fraud.
Tell me that you would make a pet out of a rubber spider? Because the spider's fake, sir. It's not a real spider. You're going to make a pet out of something that's made out of rubber?
I was a medic for 25 years. I have been puked on. I have had puke pumped into my mouth from people I've been giving artificial respiration to. You've got nothing that'll make
you're very defensive, sir.
If you try to take it away from me, I will stomp you.
What are you hiding, sir? Because you're very defensive.
You're
very defensive, so that makes me think you're hiding something.
With somebody coming onto my property.
I think you have a serious problem making a pet out of a rubber spider.
And they want to look at my packages, and if I look you in the eye, man to man, and tell you no, that has given you permission? What friggin' universe are you from?
That is giving me permission to engage you in a professional response to this clause. And
I have not given you one damn bit of permission to say anything or even come on my property. You are not.
What I'm doing is dropping a rubber spider on it, and you drop that package, I can take a look at it.
Not if he drops the
package. Look at the package, nitwit. What part of that don't you get?
I just did, because you dropped it because of the throw-up.
I haven't dropped it because of throw-up, and I haven't dropped it because of the spider. Now what are you going to do?
Well, you said, sir, that you make pets out of spiders. And then I said, you make a pet out of a rubber spider, because that's what it would be. And you said yes.
Now
I have to question your sanity.
Spiders don't scare me. What are you going to
question your sanity? Well, a rubber spider wouldn't scare anyone. A rubber spider wouldn't scare anyone.
So why are you throwing it on my package to try and make me drop it?
Because I thought it would. Now I know.
And what happens if it doesn't? Okay. Now the spider doesn't work, and I'm not turning around to look at the puke. Well, what are you going to do? Try to take the package out of my hands?
Well, I can assure you, sir, based on my experience, one of the two have worked in the past, and it will work on you. At which point, then I take a look at it. I sniff it.
And if I turn around and walk toward my door to go in my house to get away from you, if you follow me and make any move toward me, throw something on my package, whether it's a rubber spider or a real one, I don't care. I'm going to turn around and stomp you. You have just attacked me on my property.
If you call having a rubber spider put on your package attack, but we do have a variety of what we call aversion techniques.
I've got an aversion to pathetic little wimps, little turds that seem to think that they are cops and want to act like they're the Gestapo.
You do fit the Paris because you have anger issues, you collect and torture bugs, a vomit fetish,
what kind
bumblebees.
Of an idiot are you?
Can I ask you, do you think you have fake bumblebees?
You cannot possibly be taken seriously.
What does that mean? What does that mean, Mr. Santos?
This gentleman collects insects, is my understanding. Now,
what's that got to do with anything, though? That's got nothing to do with a man being a terrorist.
Well, if you put it together with if you saw the film, forget which one, Silence of the Lambs, they put a bug in a girl's mouth.
What's that got to do with what we're talking about right now, though? Not Silence of the Lambs.
Well, the gentleman, he gets out of his car with a package that smells like gunpowder, and I'm not supposed to be suspicious?
You didn't say anything about it smelling like gunpowder. You're just talking about people getting out of cars, getting out of trucks, and getting out of whatever with packages. And because we've had a terror alert, you want to look at everybody's package.
Right, and all I'm doing is tossing fake vomit on it, and he got angry. So,
you're damn right I get angry. You're damn
rubber
right
puke.
I get angry. I want to know about my authority. What is your authority to do this?
My authority comes from the Arlington Road Protocol.
What Arlington Road Protocol?
What is the Arlington Road Protocol?
This was
It was a film in which Tim Robbins was a right-wing character and blowed up, you know, he blowed up his neighborhood.
Sir, you are a pathetic little wannabe. You truly are. And somebody is going to hospitalize you because you're going to make a big mistake to somebody. No, I don't have anger issues. What I have are serious issues with people like you. No, sir, I don't collect and torture bugs. I am simply not afraid of them. I spent 2.5 years in Vietnam, and I can tell you right now, I have seen some really horrendous insects. I do not have a vomit fetish, as you so compunctiously state. What I have is the experience of 25 years, shut up, and being a paramedic.
Well,
there is nothing that the human body excretes, secretes, or forms that I haven't seen, worn, smelled, and tasted. Now, there's nothing you're going to do that's going to make me drop a package. And if you try to make me drop the package or try to take it away from me, I am going to pound you into a grease spot.
All right, so
you have attacked me on my property. You have no
one
justification whatsoever for approaching me
and
wanting to know what I'm carrying in packages. You have
if I look up in the air and I say, oh, my God, look at that.
You have zero probable cause.
Well, if I look up in the air and I go, oh, my God, look at that, an airplane's going to crash, you would look up in the air. And that's the time when we could take a look at the package.
Oh, come on, Mr. Santos. You've got every kind of
this gentleman keeps saying my package. I just want to be clear, if you don't mind. You're not talking about your genitals.
Excuse me?
You try to take it away from me or try to take a look at it or smell it? You're going to get your butt kicked.
You're saying my package. Can I be clear as to what it is you talk about? You're not talking about your genitals. We're not talking about that.
What do you think we're talking about?
I want to make sure this gentleman. Well, he's talking about wearing it and being it. If I said, look, here's the good
I have
limb.
Packages in my arms that I have taken out of my car.
Okay.
And I am back inside my house.
All right, very good,
and
sir.
You're going to stop me and tell me you want to look at them because you think they may contain bomb-making material? By what authority, by what probable cause do you make
the
that
Arlington
assumption?
Road, the Arlington Road
what
protocol.
What probable cause do you make the assumption that I may have bomb-making material?
Given the Arlington Road protocol, the Arlington Road protocol.
I don't give a damn about the Arlington Road protocol. What authority and what probable cause do you have to assume that just because I'm taking packages out of my car and going into my house that I have bomb-making material?
I am going on the authority of the Citizens Auxiliary Police.
You are
Arlington Road Protocol,
wrong.
And if you don't accept that, is the aversion. I'm a what? I'm trying
you
to save this country.
Drone, sir. You are a pathetic drone.
Well, I think that's pretty. We're just trying to save lives. That's all we're trying to do.
No, you're not. You're prying into people. You're not. You're trying to act like you've got some authority, like you're some kind of guardian. And you are not.
You're acting like you got something to lose. You're acting like you're hiding something. You know, you're all upset because all I want to do is take a peek.
Hey, nitwit.
You're acting,
ever heard of the Fourth Amendment?
Have I
heard
of
the Fourth Amendment?
No, I have not.
You've never heard of the Fourth Amendment.
Well, I haven't heard of the Fourth. I know what's in it, but I don't know. I didn't know what's in it.
You know what's in it, though, right?
Yes, sir.
What's in it?
The Fourth Amendment is freedom of speech.
No, it's not freedom of speech.
Well, you see, you guys want to know what I know, but what do you know?
Well, this gentleman knows enough to know that you got to have probable cause. Before, the police officer has to know that there's a crime being committed before, or think there's a crime being committed before he goes and he looks at a package. You've been telling me about rubber vomit, rubber spiders.
I don't like being laughed at, Mr. Henry.
Sheriff can come into my yard and do this. Not even a sworn police officer can come into my property
wrong.
And do what you're
I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong. I think a sworn police officer could say, drop the package and step away from it.
Not if he doesn't know that. No, he can't. If he's got reason to believe that that man, or he suspects that he's been told somebody has a package with a bomb. There's somebody in this neighborhood. There's someone on that street. He's walking around, and these police officers are trying to cover all their bases. He may say that to the man. You're going to have to drop that package, sir, because I have to look at that package. But you don't have any information at all other than I'm going to go out and see if there's packages with bombs in them.
All right, so you never heard of 9/11? Okay, thanks a lot.
I heard a 9-11. You know, I'm going to have to take a break. JR, thank you so much, sir, for your call, though. Very, very good. Our number eight, Mr. Santos, I've heard a 9-11. Mr. Santos. Mr. Santos?
Forget it. Forget about it.
Oh, all right, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Mr. Santos?
I don't care.
So you don't want to talk to me.
The Phil Hendry Show.
I hate
you.
Phil Hendry.
Jay, we just have a couple of more minutes, and I know that you wanted to. Is this the song?
Yeah, I want to play a song for you called "Last Christmas," because if we don't take the terrorism threat seriously, maybe this is last Christmas. That last gentleman when I talked to, I'm sure he's a good man, but he can kiss Christmas goodbye if that guy's walking around not afraid of vomit. Okay, can I ask a question?
What?
I would rather at this particular point, Mr. Henry, you stop this and put on a Coldplay version, if you don't mind. Coldplay version?
No, we're playing Wham, okay?
All right, well, I mean, you... God. Mr. Henry, this band was found in a toilet. This band was arrested in a toilet. And
well, this is the good version, okay?
I'm just simply asking for Coldplay.
I'm not putting on any Coldplay. I'd rather play Wham than Coldplay.
Oh, my God. So you're telling me that Coldplay is more... Is less masculine?
Yeah, that's right. Coldplay is less masculine than Wham.
Oh, my God. Would you please... Mr. Henry, would you please put on Coldplay?
No.
All right, then I have no choice but to mock you for what you've done. I have to...
Oh, grow up.
I'm the one that said to play it.
Yeah, you did, and I'm playing it.
But Coldplay.
I ain't playing Coldplay.
What an ass. Honest to God, what an ass. You are meant it. Now I know
what a fool I'm last Christmas. Okay, there, you happy?
Okay, this here. Gave it back to me. I'm Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. I join with Coldplay and all the other people that have done this song, Glee and Taylor Swift and Savage Garden, to save you. Oh, Savage Garden did a good version, too.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. So you are now impugning my manhood because I happen to like Savage Garden.
That's what I'm doing.
This is Jay Santos, Citizens Auxiliary Police, hoping that you survive Christmas and that...
And now, the Phil Hendry Show presents a Phil Hendry Christmas Carol. We take you now to the offices of Ebenezer Dickman. And there, alone in front of a paltry little fire, is Bob Cratchit. He's trying to keep himself warm. Ebenezer Dickman is due in at any moment.
Whew. Oh, man. Sure is cold. I wish I had just another piece of coal that I could warm myself by. Now I've got to get these accounts done, and then I can split home and be with the family for Christmas. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Cratchit. Hi, everybody. Oh, this is so, so difficult. Hey, wait a minute. Who's this?
Surprise!
Hey, Dave! I mean, Fred!
How you doing? Hey, where my uncle, man?
He's out right now. Fred, the nephew of Ebenezer Dickman. How you been?
I'm doing real good, and I came by just to say Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Cratchit,
And I hope everything's good for you. You know, I don't want anything to blow your mind or bum you out or anything, even though my uncle's going to fire you eventually, you know. And, yeah, he's a cheap creep. I mean, he's a wonderful man, Mr. Dickman. What are you doing tonight? Well, I'm getting married, and so I'm going to be with my fiancé, and we're going to have a party, and I want to stop by and see whether or not, you know, my uncle want to come by. Well, he ought to fall by any second now, but he went out, and I don't know what he's doing, you know. One thing he ain't doing is paying a heating bill around here. Brother, it's cold. Yeah, it is very, very cold. I don't know why, but, well, you know how Mr. Scrooge is. He likes to do business the way he likes to do business. Well, let me open a window. Don't open the window, man. It's blowing me out of here. Close the window. Oh, sorry. Oh, look. Here comes my uncle, Ebenezer Dickman, right now. Come in.
What do you mean, come in? Door's locked, jackpot, and everything. Close that door and freeze my ass off in this place. Now, what the hell do you want?
I just came by to wish you a very, very Merry Christmas, Uncle Dickman.
Yeah, humbug. Humbug. I don't believe in it, and neither do you, neither. And what are you taking my employee here, Mr. Cratchit, off of what he's supposed to be thinking about and doing everything?
Yeah, we work at a counting house here. You know, I always want to ask you, what is a counting house?
Well, I don't know. A counting house? What is a counting house?
I think it's like an accountant, only it was back in the 19th century.
It's pretty hot in here. Hey, how come you use an extra piece of coal?
Oh, Mr. Scrooge, it was so cold.
Let me open a window. Open the window! Ah, fresh air! Close it! Close the window!
Man. Well, anyway, I hope you can come by the house tonight, Uncle Dickman.
Why don't I want to come by? Will you close the window?
Stuck.
Why don't I want to come by your house?
Because we're going to make merry. We're going to have all kinds of people, a gay, frolic time.
What do you mean, gay?
Like, happy.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't believe in that. And Cratchit don't either. And you, did he invite you?
No, sir. I'm going to be making merry with my own family, Mrs. Cratchit, and, of course, Tiny Tim.
Ha ha, Tiny Tim. He's all gimped out and everything.
Well, he does have a bad leg.
Yeah, limping down the street and all of that. I bet you want the night off and maybe tomorrow, too, don't you?
You know, Uncle, why don't you take the day off, too? Come on over. Chill. We have a...
Yeah, we certainly have wine coolers and stuff. What do you think I am anyway, huh? You think I'm at a car club?
No, really. Come on by and make merry. It's Christmas. Christmas is the time where everybody makes merry. Everybody loves everybody. Everybody...
Oh, I didn't know that you played the mandolin.
Well, just a little bit, you know.
No way, no way, no way. Get out of here and don't ever darken my towels or my... Don't darken my pants at...
Don't darken my door.
Don't darken my door again.
And so Scrooge left Bob Cratchit to his own devices, cold, miserable, but happy that he would be home on Christmas Eve.
Bunch of bullcrap, if you ask me.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for cutting my wages in half and only giving me half the day off.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Bob Cratchit made his way home in the snow, but it was a beautiful snow. A beautiful snow because he knew he'd be home with his family. Oh, I can't wait to be home with my people, my wife and my kids. And I'm going to buy him a goose. Yeah, that's it. No, not just one goose, two gooses. No, not just two gooses, three gooses. Well, I'll even get him some of them hot nuts. I don't know what that stuff is. And quite frankly, I don't think it's for a family show, but I'm doing it. I'm doing it. Making his way home, he found his family making merry.
Oh, Tiny Tim, you're just so tiny. Well, Mom, I hope that Daddy will be home, and then we'll have the goose. Why, that might be your father now. Bob Cratchit, look at you.
I stopped off, and I got this big prize-winning goose, even though I've been fired, and I don't have any money.
Why do we have to make references about being fired in the middle of a recession and everything? Well, look at that goose, Dad. That's the biggest one that I ever see.
Well, how many gooses have you seen? This is the only... In fact, I don't really like goose.
We're having goose, and we're making merry, even though you're fired, even though we have nothing left in our retirement, even though, actually, your 6 months severance I've already spent. We're going to make merry. It's Christmas time.
Well, let me raise a glass and toast to the benefactor of this meal, Ebenezer Dickman.
I will not do that.
Please, darling, not on Christmas. We should have spirit of
good spirit and good love for everyone, even Mr. Dickman.
Well, all right, but he treats you like garbage. Daddy, is Ebenezer Dickman going to come over and give me prizes and presents and have my leg fixed?
That's later on. I mean, later on in the show. I don't know. No, of course not. He's an ass. But I do raise my glass and toast to Ebenezer Dickman. I mean, yeah. Meanwhile, across town, Ebenezer Dickman makes his way home. He makes his way home to his own lonely abode. No one to love him. No one to care for him, but he don't give a crap.
I'm going home now, and no one, I don't care. When I get home, I have me a big bowl of gruel and I don't know, whatever they eat. What's that? Yeah, man, Dickman. Whoa, Dickman. Who's there? Must be something that I ate. Maybe an unboiled piece of potato. Perhaps just an undigested piece of fruit. Maybe it was at Slim Jim. I have no idea. Let me go in my house here. Boy, it sure is cold outside, but fortunately for me, I have the place insulated. Just turn on the central heat, and here we go. Too much central heat. Oh, warm myself at a fire. Boy, did I make a lot of money today, I'll tell you that right now. Who in bloody hell is at the door right now at the office? What are you here for?
Are you Ebenezer Dickman?
Yeah.
May we come in?
What do you want?
It's very cold out here, sir.
Hey, I don't care. It's cold out here. What do you want? You're bugging me. I'm about to sit down and have myself a Slim Jim. My yearly Christmas Slim Jim.
Well, we were wondering, sir, if you wouldn't mind donating to a fund that the business people here in London have set up for the poor people. Yes, it would help so many people, you know. I have a lingerie store myself.
What are you doing, donating underwear or panties and stuff?
No, sir, nothing like that. It is money to help the people. Otherwise, they wind up in the poorhouses and the workhouses.
Exactly. Better that they die and get rid of the surplus population.
Well, that's hardly the spirit of the season, sir. Can we put you down for a farthing?
Not a farthing, not a bloody brass farthing will I donate to them. Get out of here, you creep. All right, now, let's see, where was I? Ah, yes, I had the radio playing and my favorite song. Now, I was just about to sit down at... Oh, Dickman. Yeah, man. Who are you? I saw you at the front door and everything.
I'm your partner, man. Jacob Marley.
Jacob Marley? Bull crap.
Bull crap? Go ahead. Try to shoo me away, man. You're never going to get rid of me until I tell you.
What are you wearing them chains for?
These are the chains that I forged in my lifetime. When I was working for you, all I did was make money. And I cobble together these chains link by link, man. Link by link.
Why are you wearing chains? We made a lot of money together, Mr. Marley. I don't understand.
My business should have been the business of the human race. Instead, you and I are sitting in an accounting house, just counting stuff, you know.
I found out what an accounting house is, by the way.
Yeah, what is it?
It's like an accountant.
How the hell you make money? Anyway, yeah. So that's what I did. And now I'm doomed. Doomed. Walk the earth. And every year I got to come here and bug you and remind you to not live your life the way I live my life.
Well, thank God your chain stopped. Well, I think I'm going to go to bed. I can't take this. Put on some nice soothing music. This is all a bunch of humbug. I don't believe in spirits and ghosts and everything like that. Marley's been dead these 7 years.
And so Ebenezer Dickman made his way to his bedchamber and laid down for a sleep.
Wait a minute. Who's there? Who is that?
Oh, hi.
Who are you?
Oh, I'm the ghost of Christmas past.
Ghost of Christmas past?
Didn't Marley mention something?
No, he didn't mention anything to me about ghost Christmas past or anything.
Well, he was supposed to. Anyway, I'm here, and I'm going to take you to look at how you basically jacked your life up. What do you think?
I don't like the idea of that at all, and you scare me in your tight pants and your heels and everything. And
Well, most people like to see me.
Yeah, but your butt fell a little bit, but...
Anyway, take my hand.
I don't want to fly. I can't fly. I'm human. I ain't no spirit.
You'll fly. Just take my hand.
Flying through the night, the ghost of Christmas past took Ebenezer Dickman into his past.
Well, where are we now?
Oh, you don't recognize this? This is old Fezziwig's place. Do you remember working for Fezziwig?
Oh, yeah, Fezziwig. He is bitching. He's always treated me good.
Well, let's take a look at the young Ebenezer Dickman and what he was doing.
Now, I'll tell you something, Ebenezer. As soon as we all done counting all this up, we're going to close up them shutters, and we're going to have ourselves a drink. What do you think about that?
I really think that's a great idea, Mr. Fezziwig. You're such a nice man, the best man I ever worked for.
That's right. I'm the nicest man you ever worked for. And after we have a drink, maybe we have another drink. Now I'm going home, and tomorrow I want y'all to have dinner with me.
Mr. Fezziwig, you're the bestest guy that I ever did know. Boy, I sure did love old Fezziwig.
I know you did. And you said you didn't like black people.
Well. Where are we going now?
I want to show you something else from your past.
Wow. That's little Cindy. Cindy, I knew little Cindy.
Watch. Oh, please, please, Ebenezer. You can marry me and we'll be happy.
Are you crazy or something? I'll go make money and everything.
But you can live here in our village and we can have children.
Children? No, I'm going to London. This place is nowhere. This is Ennsville. This burg is... Oh, man, it's jacking me up. I'm out of here. Yeah, I know. The boob job.
Cost you plenty.
Don't you remember her?
Yeah, I do. I miss her. Especially those... Well, you know...
They flew through the night and wound up right back at Scrooge's place.
Well, as long as you're here, would you, would you like a drink?
I beg your pardon, I'm the ghost of Christmas past. These breasts may be fake, but they actually aren't real, you know.
My hand went right through one.
And so off to sleep he went, but to be visited by two more spirits that night. Phil Hendry Christmas Carol will continue in just a moment.
Fake boobs.
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Ebenezer Scrooge,
Dickman.
Ebenezer Dickman is sleeping soundly, having been visited by the ghost of Christmas past. But his nighttime adventures are not yet finished.
Holy Jesus. Who are you?
Allow me to introduce myself. I'm Ted Bell, I'm the ghost of Christmas present.
You're not supposed to say you're Ted Bell. You're just supposed to say that you're ghost of Christmas present.
Now listen, they want to be in this gig. I want to get a little bit of advertising in, so I am Ted. I'm Ted Bell.
I know. You're Ted Bell, the ghost of Christmas present. Now what?
What? Now what? Listen, friend, you're going to be saw logs here all night. I'm going to take out a big tour of the town, show you Christmas present, show you what you're missing, right?
I don't care about Christmas present and everything.
Didn't that ghost of Christmas past show you that chick that you missed out on and show you Fezziwig?
Well... Sorta she did.
I mean, sorta she did. Come on with me. We're going to take you on a tour of Christmas present.
How many other Christmas presents are there?
I had over 1,900...
Christmas presents.
Oh, you mean presents. Just take my hand here.
Oh, boy, are we going to start flying again?
You bet.
Okay, we're done flying.
Now... Take a look in there. Oh, first I got to open the door so we can look in there.
Oh, wait a minute.
I can't quite get the door. Give me a hand, will you?
Right here.
Just...
got it. Thanks so very much. What the heck is going on anyway?
Hey, this is your nephew's home. Your nephew, Fred.
Yeah? What's this?
It's some of the music they're playing.
Yeah. So anyway, I said to this guy, why don't you come over and we can have a regular Christmas time.
No kidding?
Yeah. That's your uncle, though, man. That cat, he doesn't have any kind of time for fun at all. No, my uncle's okay. Yeah, turn this up. Yeah, I like this. Yeah. This is a bad jam. Anyway.
The wine cooler.
Here's another one, man. I said to my uncle, I said, listen, Uncle Dickman, you ought to come over, have yourself some tamale, another wine cooler, all that, you know. I got the latest jam, you know. Listen, this year, I love this, man. This baby old school, I love this.
Yeah.
Up high, man, up high, yeah.
They look like they're having fun.
Of course they're having fun. They're a bunch of having the tamales and everything. That's your nephew, Fred. Look at all the fun he's having. And he's going to get married, too.
He's always been very irresponsible with his money and stuff.
Yes, but he's a generous man, has all the people over to his house. That's not grabbing you, huh?
Uh-uh.
All right, well,
But I do like this song. Can I stay?
No. We've got places to go and people to see.
Where are we going now? I hated it. Flying through the air and everything, that chick did it.
We're not flying, we're walking.
Oh, that's right.
I just happen to be carrying you under my arm. We're going to take you now over to the place where your poor, poor employee lives, Bob Cratchit. Yes, my dears. And now for the pudding.
Oh, Daddy, I really like the pudding a lot. Oh, isn't this a lovely pudding?
Great pudding, big deal.
You see the love that these people have for each other?
Well, sorta. It looks like a pretty good goose that they had, too.
That's right. And they got it over here at Bristol Farm, and they had it on sale. Well, you don't want to know.
Yes, my dears, a merry, merry Christmas.
Daddy, I hope all of our Christmases are like this and everything for, you know, and if...
Yeah, just don't strain yourself, Tiny Tim, talking.
Poor child can't walk and can't talk, but I love him so.
I love all of you, my dears. A merry, 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 merry Christmas.
It's Cratchit. Got the spirit all right.
Yes, the family together enjoying themselves. And look at these two strangers walking down the street.
Oh, I was telling that man, hey, what's up? Merry Christmas to you, man.
Merry Christmas to you too, brother.
But I guess I should take you back to your house, huh? Because you don't have anything to do with Christmas. Why, who needs Christmas? It's just another day of the year that someone can pick your pocket.
Well, I don't feel that way. I mean, look at all the fun that everybody's having. And there's Cratchit and that...
No. I'm taking you home.
Please don't take me home. Shoot!
Through the night, they flew.
Why are you taking me back?
I'm taking you back because obviously you don't care about Christmas. I'm showing you Cratchit. I'm showing you your nephew. I showed you those two strangers. I got a couple of tickets to see the Yankees box seats.
That I can use.
Yeah, well, not this time.
They flew back to Ebenezer Dickman's house. And it was there that Dickman was deposited. And into repose he went yet again. But...
Hurry up, will you? We got a break coming.
Another spirit would visit him before the night was out. A Phil Henry Christmas Carol will continue after this.
Phil Henry.
Christmas Carol continues. Having been visited by two spirits during the night, the ghost of Christmas past and the ghost of Christmas present, Ebenezer Dickman awaits his final visitor. Hey!
Oh! Who are you?
Well now, who do you think I am, huh?
I know their spirits told me that I'd be visited by three, and there's the one, two...
Yeah, that's right. I guess I'm number three, aren't I?
Are you, sir, the ghost of Christmas future? Of things what is gonna be, but it ain't not been yet?
That's exactly who I am. Whatever it was that you just said. Now let me tell you something. And let me tell you something real twin. Move a muscle. Twitch a finger. And I'll scatter your brains all over this bedroom.
Oh, ghost of Christmas future, you're gonna take me out into the cold and...
Oh, shut up.
What happened to the music?
Oh, wait. I'm gonna take a look and see. Christmas is in the future.
No, are we back here at the Cratchit's house for crying out loud?
I want you to pay attention to what's going on in that house. Bob Cratchit, the guy you sacked on Christmas Eve.
Well, I didn't mean to.
Oh, you didn't mean... Oh, yeah, yeah, you didn't mean to.
Darling, I'm sure he'd want it that way.
Well, I just see keeping his crutch there near the...
Near the stool. Oh, ghost, why is Bob Cratchit crying?
Shut up. Keep your mouth shut.
I walked by his grave today.
Yes, dear.
It helps me. It helps me sometimes. Makes me feel like there's something to live for, if but for his memory.
It's so funny. You used to... run and jump when you had Tiny Tim on your shoulders and you walked so slowly today.
Well, I used to run and jump with Tiny Tim on my shoulders because of the bladder prey. You remember that?
Oh, that's right. That you had that...
I had it fixed and then he died.
Oh, no. No, please, Spirit, don't tell me Tiny Tim died.
That's right, he died. And do you want to know why he died?
Because I didn't pay Cratchit a...
Why did you quit your sniveling? He died because you didn't pay him enough money so he could get his son's bum leg fixed.
There's a club foot.
I don't know what it was. Club foot, bum leg, the poor kid's dead.
Oh, Spirit, I'd do anything in the world to make everything different and stuff. And it...
I don't believe you. I don't believe you at all.
Come on, Spirit, you know that I'm...
No, I don't believe you. I'm gonna take you and see something else.
No, come on.
I said I'm taking you to see something else. Take my hand. Not that hand.
Oh. Where are we going, Spirit? I've seen that Tiny Tim is all croaked out and stuff.
No place, man.
Here we are. Right here. Well, I say, it's been quite a good Christmas. Wouldn't you say it's been a good Christmas?
Yes, very good Christmas. Oh, by the way, did you hear he died?
Who's that?
You know. The old man.
Oh. You know, I thought I got some money down from him at Christmas. I knew he's a cheap creep that he didn't really do that, did he?
No, he did not. He didn't do it even though I went to him and I said, sir.
Oh, stop that. It's so disgusting. It's so vile.
But I bet you are aroused by that, are you not?
Bastard. Well, he's dead. He's dead. We tried to do everything we could, and there was nothing we could do about it.
No. It goes like this. He's dead. He's dead. We tried to do everything we could, and there was nothing we could do about it.
I've seen Goodfellas five times, and I'm telling you...
Who are they talking about, Spirit?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Where are we going now?
We're going to a place that just might answer a lot of your questions.
Oh, God, this is creeping me out. I'm seriously creeping. You're kidding, right?
No, I ain't.
Oh, no. Spirit, this place, it looks like it's, I don't know, it looks like it's a graveyard or something.
Yay, get the bright boy.
Where are we going?
Well, let's see.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
I never keep these places alphabetical.
What letter are you looking for?
I'm looking for the letter S.
No, Spirit, no. Not the letter S.
That's right. The letter S.
Spirit, the grave you're pointing to, does that start with the letter S?
It starts with the letter E, and then S, but it's...
All right, wait. Okay, E-S. Is it an animal, vegetable?
Will you shut up?
Spirit, don't tell me. Don't tell me that these are things that have to be. Tell me that these are things that maybe could be, maybe, but are not going to be maybe.
The hell are you talking about?
I'm saying... You're the ghost of Christmas future, right?
Yeah, that's what it says on my business card.
All right. Are these the things of things what are gonna be? Or are they things what are gotta be what gotta be?
Are you asking me, are these things that have to be, got to be that...
Never mind, let me look at the grave. Oh, no! It says it. Ebenezer Dickman.
That would be you, right?
Please, Spirit, tell me that these things can be sponged away if a man changes his life. Tell me, Spirit. Tell me, Spirit. Tell... You're not going to tell me, are you?
No.
Please, Spirit, please... Tell me that these things can be sponged away and that a man can change his life and all the things that he's done. What a piece of ass.
On through the night flew Ebenezer Dickman. The spirit was gone. But Ebenezer Dickman was there, flying through the night, only to be finally deposited back in his bed.
I'm alive. Good God Almighty, it's alive. I mean, I'm alive. What day is it? Let me just walk right over here to the door and now let me open the window. Ah, boy. Hey, you kid.
What do you want?
What day is it, kid?
What?
What day is it?
I can't hear you.
What day is it?
Well, oh, it's Monday.
No! What day is it?
Oh, yeah, it's, well, I'm an atheist, but,
Is it Christmas? Would it be Christmas today?
Yeah, it's Christmas.
Ah! Yes! All right, kid, here, take this. It's about 20 bucks. Go get that big goose that's hanging in the window down there at, whatever the hell it is.
Bristol Farm?
Yeah. And then deliver it over to Bob Kratchman, or I forget his last name, he worked for me for 20 years. And deliver it over there, okay? And I'll give you a half a farthing.
What's a farthing?
I mean, I'll give you, like, $5.
Okay.
Great. It's Christmas. I haven't missed it at all. Now I'm going over to my beautiful nephew Fred's house. I'm going to feed Fred and everybody, and I'm so grateful.
Oh, yeah, man. Hey, another thing we can do. One of them tamales is going to be ready, okay? Yeah. Oh, man, somebody at the door? Yeah.
Hey, Uncle Dickman. Hello, Fred. Merry, Merry Christmas to you.
Uncle Dickman, you high or something, man? Are you like, I don't want you smoking, putting some of that rat poison on the shrooms or something?
No. No rat poison on shrooms, you jackass. Turn that. Here, put this on. This is a really good CD I got.
What is this, man? Oh, yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. Listen, Fred, I want you to know I want to make you a partner in my counting house.
Bull crap. You kidding me, man? He's yanking me.
No, I'm not yanking you, I swear.
You want me to be a partner?
Yeah. And I'm so sorry, Fred. I'm sorry that we was never close, and we were never, you know. And
you can just, like, take your hand.
Oh, sorry. And I want you to be my partner, Fred. And a Merry Christmas to you and everything like that and what they say and everything.
Yeah, they say Merry Christmas.
Yeah, okay.
Wow, what a change has come over my Uncle Dickman. Maybe he got visited by three spirits. I don't know, you know. There's something in my head. It's crazy, you know. Who made this punch, man?
On he went through the day. Yes, it was Ebenezer Dickman now who was going to visit the home of Bob Cratchit. And so anyway...
Who is that?
Why... Mr. Dickman.
Hello, Bob.
What's all that stuff?
These are presents that I have for you and for Tim and for your lovely wife there, Margaret, or whatever her name is. It doesn't matter to me.
Well, yeah, Margaret.
Wow, this is really nice, Mr. Dickman. Why did you bring it?
On account of you're crippled, and I want to get your leg fixed, too.
You mean if I wasn't a cripple, you wouldn't bring it?
Well, not really, no.
Oh, Mr. Dickman, sir, you fired me.
No, I'm bringing you back, Bob, at... Double the salary! Yay!
And so it was said that forevermore, Ebenezer Dickman kept Christmas and kept Christmas well.
UCLA Medical Center?
Yeah, this is Ebenezer Dickman.
Yes, sir.
Do you have a kid there named Tiny Tim?
Yes, we do. You brought him in, sir. You gave us that blank check to have his leg fixed.
Yeah, that was on... I don't know what happened, but blank check that... I need to cancel payment on that because...
Wait, sorry, I don't understand.
I don't know. It happens every year. I get the, you know, I want to fix a kid's leg, and I can't afford that jazz. You know, it's not going to happen.
A Phil Hendry Christmas Carol, starring Bud Dickman as Ebenezer Dickman, Phil Hendry as Bob Cratchit, Margaret Gray as Mrs. Cratchit, R.C. Collins as Tiny Tim, and I forget the rest of the people. Oh, yeah, Ted Bell is the ghost of Christmas present.
Thank you.
Phil Hendry.
That's House of Heroes, huh? You like that, Bud?
I'm telling you, please tell me that the ghost of the thing...
What are you, a method actor or something, man? You're out of the part.
Oh.
Anyway, well, our show is produced by Jason Rance. We call him Rance. He's a good man. These guys put up with more from me than any man should have to, and yet they do have to. Our engineer is Ralph Rodriguez, our technical director, a great man. We have so many people behind the scenes. Well, not that many, just maybe one or two. Just run out to get me coffee. Alex, thank you, man, for getting me coffee. And let's... Oh, yeah, Dan, our screener. Dan, brother, I've never seen a cat fall into the job of screening this show so quickly, so professionally, and so well as you. I know I sound like a jackass, but you have mastered the art of screening this radio show faster than anybody that I have ever known in my life.
you're lying.
No, I'm not. I am not lying at all. And if I wasn't such a Scrooge, I'd be giving you guys bonuses in your envelope. Well, maybe. Anyway, we hope that you guys have a marvelous, marvelous Christmas. And we're going to tell you to go over to the website, philhenryshow.com, so you can check out the Phil Henry Christmas Carol and a bunch of other stuff. Great archive stuff for you there on the Phil Henry Show website. I'm going to knock this baby out now with my favorite Christmas song of all time, The Pogues, Fairy Tale of New York.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank.
What kind of Christmas song is this?
An old man said to me,
shut up, will you? In a drunk tank.
And say another one.
Learn your lines.
And then he sang a song.
Is this the vision of things?
The rare old mountain dew. I turned my face away and dreamed about you. Got on a lucky one. Came in late 10 to 1. I've got a feeling this year's for me and you. So happy Christmas. I love you, baby. I can see a better time when all our dreams come true.
You promised me Broadway was waiting for me. You were handsome.
You were pretty queen of New York City.
When the band finished playing, they held out for more. Sinatra was swinging, all the drunks they were singing. We kissed on the corner, then danced through the night. The boys of the NYPD choir were singing Galway Bay. And the bells were ringing out for Christmas Day.
By the way, for some reason, we're watching a documentary on Nazis. I don't know.
Yeah, what's that about?
I don't know. It was on TV.
You're a bum, you're a punk.
You're an old slut and jumper, and they're almost dead on a drip in that boat.
You scumbag, you maggot, you cheap, lousy faggot. Happy Christmas, you're ours, I make God, it's our love.
The boys of the NYPD choir still singing Galway Bay. And the bells are ringing out. I could have been someone.
Well, so could anyone. You took my dreams from me when I first found you.
I kept them with me, babe. I put them with my own. Can't make it all alone. I built my dreams around you. The boys of the NYPD chorus to sing Galway Bay. And the bells are ringing out for Christmas Day.
Phil Henry.